Translation and Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thereupon, when all the good signs of the zodiac gradually evolved, the heir apparent of Pandu, who would be exactly like him in prowess, took birth. Astronomical calculations of stellar influences upon a living being are not suppositions, but are factual, as confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Every living being is controlled by the laws of nature at every minute, just as a citizen is controlled by the influence of the state. The state laws are grossly observed, but the laws of material nature, being subtle to our gross understanding, cannot be experienced grossly. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 3.9, every action of life produces another reaction, which is binding upon us. And only those who are acting on behalf of Yajna, Vishnu, are not bound by reactions. Our actions are judged by the higher authorities, the agents of the Lord, and thus we are awarded bodies according to our activities. The law of nature is so subtle that every part of our body is influenced by the respective stars, and a living being obtains his working body to fulfill his terms of imprisonment by the manipulation of such astronomical influence. A man's destiny is therefore ascertained by the birth time constellation of stars, and a factual horoscope is made by a learned astrologer. It is a great science, and misuse of a science does not make it useless. Maharaj Parikshit, or even the personality of Godhead, appear in certain constellations of good stars, and thus the influence is exerted upon the body thus born at an auspicious moment. The most auspicious constellation of stars takes place during the appearance of the Lord in this material world, and it is specifically called Jayanti, a word not to be abused for any other purposes. Maharaj Parikshit was not only a great Kshatriya emperor, but also a great devotee of the Lord. Thus, he cannot take his birth at any inauspicious moment. As a proper place and time is selected to receive a respectable personage, so also to receive such a personality as Maharaj Parikshit, who was especially cared for by the Supreme Lord, a suitable moment is chosen when all good stars assemble together to exert their influence upon the king. Thus he took his birth just to be known as the great hero of Srimad Bhagavatam. This suitable arrangement of astral influences is never a creation of man's will, but is the arrangement of the superior management of the agency of the Supreme Lord. Of course, the arrangement is made according to the good and bad deeds of the living being. Herein lies the importance of pious acts performed by the living being. Only by pious acts can one be allowed to get good wealth, good education, and beautiful features. The sangskaras of the school of Sanatana Dharma, man's eternal engagement, are highly suitable for creating an atmosphere for taking advantage of good stellar influences, and therefore Garbhadana Sangskara, or the first seedling purificatory process prescribed for the higher castes, is the beginning of all pious acts to receive a good, pious and intelligent class of men in human society. There will be peace and prosperity in the world due to good and sane population only. There is hell and disturbance only because of the unwanted insane populace addicted to sense indulgence. Tata sarva gado darke sanukula grahodaye jagye vangshadarach pandor bhuya panduribhaujasa. Thereupon, when all the good signs of the zodiac gradually evolved, the heir apparent of Pandu, who would be exactly like him in prowess, took birth. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Vansha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Eva Cha Patitanam Pavanipyo Vaishnavipyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shrivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we're hearing a lot about astrology here. So astrology is a non-essential aspect of Vedic culture. It is obviously quite prominent in our society. Because it's not essential, we don't need to take too much shelter of it. But because it's part of the science, we can utilize it in Krishna's service. So it's a balance. You'll find amongst the devotee community, you'll sometimes find discussions about to what extent we should take advantage of astrology, and then we end up with different opinions, and we respect diversity and we honor different opinions. So I'll say some things I've thought about that kind of helped me to make a balanced decision on this. On one occasion, Prabhupada specifically said he did not want astrology introduced into our society. And the reason he gave was, he said, you will end up depending on astrology and not depending on Krishna. So that is one angle. But Prabhupada also said opposite things. For example, in the 10th canto, when Krishna's born, you know, Garga Muni, he then does the astrology. And Prabhupada says, it is the duty of every father to have the horoscope done for his child, and therefore bring him up according to what the horoscope reveals, you see. So it is necessary, it is a duty in some circumstances, and at other times our mood is to simply depend on Krishna. Now here's an interesting example. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was perhaps the greatest astrologer of his time. In fact, there's one pastime. There was a debate, there were different schools of thought in astrology, and he discovered a discrepancy that went against the teachings of one of the renowned schools of astrology, and it ended up turning into a debate. And the person who was the head of the school, he was an elderly man, he was in the audience, he wasn't debating, but he was there in the audience, and one of his students was debating, and in the debate, the student was soundly defeated by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. And the person who was the head of the school, he was so shocked by this that he involuntarily lost control of his bodily functions, unfortunately. Anyway, but the point was this. When he was roughly 25, he gave up the practice of astrology, or the actual study of astrology. He still employed it, but he gave up the study of astrology. And he said he would instead devote his entire life to spreading Krishna consciousness. Now, here's an interesting part. Even though he gave up astrology, still, there's one aspect of astrology that you shouldn't travel on a Thursday. Now, I don't want you to take this seriously because I travel to central London every Thursday, and I don't want you to not come with me. Please come and join me for Harinam. But anyway, what he used to do, he put his shoes outside the door, which indicated that he started the journey on Wednesday. And then he would travel on Thursday, you see. So there's always ways around it. So that indicates that, on the one hand, he rejected he rejected taking shelter of astrology, but at the same time, he looked like he was still quite interested in making sure that certain astrological recommendations were upheld. So there's just some things for you to think about. So this is my class plan, you see. I have five classes because I have a bad memory, you see. I figure if I learn to give sort of about 3 hours worth of class, then if I forget most of it, then I'll still manage to find 40 minutes worth of things to say. So I'm going to do the second class now, okay? So Subtle Laws, it's called. It's mentioned here by Prabhupada that the law of karma is a subtle law. Does anyone remember that part? He said the state laws are gross. We see them in operation. It is obvious, like, for example, people do not steal. Why? Because they know that the police are around, they might get caught. But how many people in the United Kingdom do not steal because they think it's a violation of the law of karma? How many people would get away? If they thought they would get away with stealing, they would do it anyway. Lots of people. And the proof, for example, what happens when there's a hurricane, when there's devastation? You know what happens? The amount of theft goes right up because people understand there's no one in charge anymore and they start breaking into houses and stealing things. This is what happens after natural disasters. It's an unfortunate part of life. So this indicates that people have no belief in the law of karma. And why would they? How do you prove the law of karma? You can't. You know, sometimes at Bhaktivedanta Manor, we have these little advertisements for classes. And one of them is, why do bad things happen to good people, right? It's one of the standard titles of a seminar. We see this seminar has been given for so many years. And people are always interested to go to this because they have this feeling, why are bad things happening to me? I'm trying, I'm a nice person, why are bad things happening? Now, the obvious answer is, there is a stockpile of karma. And our acharyas say that it's actually infinite. There's an infinite stockpile of karma. So life after life after life, we are doing things and the stock of karma, the reactions are there in seed form, ready to happen. So when you take birth, what happens is some of those seeds sprout and you get good or bad things happening. Other seeds lie dormant and then you create more seeds as well. So all these things are happening simultaneously. So you might be a good person. You might have a nice attitude. You might be doing good things. But then some seeds of karma from a previous time when you were bad are now sprouting. And because of that, it appears that there is injustice. But when we see things over the whole span of many, many lives, it's perfect harmony. And those seeds, those terrible things that are happening, even if you are on the path of becoming a good person, those seeds, they can help you become a good person even more. Now, I believed in the law of karma when I was about 19, and I was suffering like anything. Now, I read these Buddhist books saying about the law of karma, and you shouldn't eat meat. And that's actually why I became vegetarian. I thought to myself, if I implement this law, if I become a vegetarian, then I won't get so much bad karma, and so I won't suffer so much. And that was actually the logic by which I decided to become a vegetarian. So, but because these laws are subtle, obviously people, they don't follow them because they don't believe in them. And how would you prove that? If empiricism is your way of operating, and that pretty much is for many people in this world, they will never find a proof of the law of karma. How do you prove reincarnation? Now, you can philosophically do so. And it goes something like this. There are three states of consciousness. It's actually mentioned in the previous purport that the Lord is transcendental to space. Anyone who was there on Friday will know that because the Lord appeared to Parikshit Maharaj. And Prabhupada makes the point, he was always there in the first place because he's transcendental to space. There's nowhere where the Lord is not. He's all-pervading. He just reveals himself and then he disappears. Like in the Bhagavad Gita, everything rests upon me like pearls strung on a thread. We can't see the thread, but the thread is behind everything. So the Lord is transcendental to the three dimensions of space. Therefore, he's known as Turiya or Turiya. Turiya means the fourth. This is the word that appears in our scriptures quite often, Turiya, Turiya. And our acharyas, they give different meanings. One meaning is he's transcendental to three-dimensional space. Another meaning is he is transcendental to the three modes. And a third meaning, he's transcendental to the three states of consciousness. So what are these three states? Jagrat, wakefulness, svapna, dreaming state, and sushupti, which is the state of deep sleep. So in the wakeful state, our senses, our gross senses are active. In the dreaming state, our gross senses are inactive, but our subtle senses are active. And in deep sleep, both our gross and our subtle senses are inactive. Now here's the philosophical proof that we continue to exist. If we experience, or we won't experience it, but if we have deep sleep and we wake up from this deep sleep, how are we the same person as before we had that deep sleep? If our gross senses are inactive, if our subtle senses are inactive, if our mind is inactive, right? What is it that continues to exist? That means that when we wake up, we are the same person as before we enter deep sleep. Or if we have an anesthetic, if we're like, say we have a general anesthetic, how are we the same person when we wake up? What is continuing to exist? And reflection upon that is what makes us realize that we actually exist on a fourth dimension. And that fourth dimension is called Turiya. This is Vedic psychology. We're talking here about our science is very subtle, which why people don't understand it. So that's a subtle aspect, how we continue to exist. So when I went to university, there was a philosophy course. So then one of the questions was, are we the mind or are we the body? And what's the relationship between the two? It's one of the big questions. But when you become a Hare Krishna, you realize that it's a false dichotomy. It's not that we're either the mind or the body. We're neither, because beyond the mind, there's the intelligence, and beyond the intelligence, there's the soul, you see. So through this introspection of deep sleep, we come to the conclusion that we must continue to exist. And from that, we can then extrapolate and understand, if we're philosophical enough, that we must continue to exist from life after life. And that would explain how it's possible that we can actually go through a chain of reincarnation and still be existing eternally as an entity. So I'm going to talk about my next class, class number 3. I have to always slip in something controversial. So I'm going to talk about the word Jayanti. But actually, although I've actually written about this before, and I've discussed this with devotees before, and the last time I discussed it, it didn't go well. The devotee didn't like what I said. So I'm going to say anyway, because it's science. And it's because it's actually mentioned in the purport. So I'll read the relevant section. The most auspicious constellation of stars takes place during the appearance of the Lord in his material world, in this material world, and it is specifically called Jayanti, a word not to be abused for any other purposes. Let's talk about what we can all agree on. Prabhupada was very unhappy that we would call famous persons like politicians, their birthday we would refer to as Jayanti. No, he didn't like this. So for example, if it's Gandhi's birthday, you don't call it Jayanti. The word Jayanti is only reserved for the Lord. Okay. Now, once upon a time I was reading Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav. I always end up talking about this book for some reason. It seems to have a lot of information that's relevant to Krishna consciousness. I recommend you read it. It's the biography of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. So there's an interesting discussion that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, he only used the word Jayanti in two circumstances. The birthday of Lord Krishna and the birthday of Gaura. And the reason he included Gaura is because Gaura is Krishna. So here's what he said. He said, the word Jayanti is a... Actually, I will read the exact thing he says because it's quite technical. Otherwise, I'll get it wrong. I meant to bring this up on my phone before the class, but I'll do it now. Okay, I'll read what he said. This is coming up now. This is actually from the book. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati opposed employing the word Jayanti for birthdays of eminent national figures, for according to several Shastriya references given in chapter 15 of Hari Bhakta Vilas, Jayanti indicates the specific time when the star Rohini is conjoined with the moon on the Krishna Paksha Ashtami of the month of Bhadra, and thus exclusively refers to the Avirbhav Tithi of Krishna. However, Gaura, being non-different from the original personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati also approved and employed the term Gaura Jayanti for the Avirbhav Tithi of Gaura. So I researched this, and here's what I found. This is from Hari Bhakta Vilas. Rohini cha yada Krishna, pakshe stamyam, Dvijotama Jayanti Nama Sa Prokta Sarva Papa Hara Titihi. In the Vishnu Dharma Purana it is said, O best of Brahmanas, when the star Rohini is conjoined with the moon on the Ashtami of the dark fortnight, that day is called Jayanti, a day that removes all sins. And that's from the 15th chapter of Haribhakta Vilas. And also from the 15th chapter, a different verse. Saumahane Buddhavariva Chastami Rohini Yuta Jayantina Masa Kyata Tamlabet Punya Sanchayai. When the Ashtami falls on a Monday or Wednesday, when the star Rohini is conjoined with the moon, that day is called Jayanti. That brings great piety. So notice how the word Jayanti refers to Ashtami, the eighth day. And this is where we get into the controversy, you see. Because Prabhupada never, at least if you look at the Veda base, Prabhupada never used the term Balaram Jayanti. Because Balaram's born in Purnim, so it's Balaram Purnim. But we have this tendency to advertise it as Balaram Jayanti. So my question is, are we allowed to do that? If it's an astrological time and it refers to Ashtami, and if only Gaura and Krishna deserve to be given the term Jayanti, their birthdays, should we actually extend it to Balaram? Now, if you argue that Balaram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and therefore he's non-different from Krishna, then maybe that would be justification for doing so. But if you want to be safe, then best not to do it. That's my attitude. And I've noticed, as I say, I don't go looking for the research in this topic, but sometime one person sent me a lecture from a Gaudiya, another Gaudiya Vaishnava who's not part of ISKCON, and I watched it. And in that lecture, he was saying, actually, Jayanti refers specifically to the birth of Krishna, and it should only be used as such. So that may be a mood of the Gaudiya Math, I'm not sure. But anyway, either way, we have to decide what to do about it. But here's an interesting point. Prabhupada, in conversation, he wasn't that strict. For example, he used the term Buddha Jayanti. Now, according to what I've just said, he shouldn't really use that term. But in a conversation he's having with someone, they brought up the word Buddha Jayanti, and he didn't correct him. Another time, someone used the term Hanuman Jayanti in conversation with Prabhupada, and he just carried on the conversation. He didn't sort of try and say to him, it's only referring to a particular time. So there's kind of like scientific speech, and there's less scientific speech. So if you're happy with less scientific speech, then Balaram Jayanti is fine. And if you think Balaram is because he's non-different from Krishna, therefore you can extend it, then maybe you're right, but I have no idea. So just to let you know, that's what I think about Balaram Jayanti. Anyway, so let's talk more about the subtle science, okay? Now, I gave two examples, astrology, subtle science, and the law of karma, subtle science. I once asked a prominent astrologer in ISKCON. I said to him, I said, you've been trained in astrology through parampara. But we see more and more people are just taken to astrology, self-taught. They just get a computer program that does it for them, and then they don't really know how to interpret it properly. So I said, is astrology going to survive? Is it going to be like, you know, are we going to end up with no qualified astrologers? He actually misunderstood my question. He thought I was saying astrology is wrong itself. But he gave me an interesting answer. He said, when you see horse manure, it means there must be a horse somewhere. So what he was saying was, although there's so much rubbish astrology around, it indicates that there must be a science of astrology behind it all. So you have to take the real science. So we have to be very careful. If we do go to astrologers, we have to be very careful we get a qualified astrologer. Now, once I read a book about astrology, actually it was a biography by an astrologer, and he was a distinguished astrologer in India. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai. Actually, in the Brahma Samhita, it said, Yas Tvendra Gopa Atavendra Ahosva Karma Bandana Rupa Pala Bhajanam Atanoti Karmani Nirdahati Kintu Chabakti Bhajam Govinda Madi Purushang Tamaham Bhajami. We should always remember this, that from the lowest, from the Lord Brahma down to the lowest insect, the Indragopa, all are receiving karma. But the devotee, karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam, there is a complete destruction of karma just through the process of devotional service. So we should always bear this in mind when we talk about astrology, that actually our real shelter is Krishna. And if we simply chant Hare Krishna, then we change our future. The thing about astrology is it can predict your future, but it won't change your future. Therefore, the law of karma is still going to act. So you maybe go to an astrologer and discover that you're going to have a bad life. Well, okay, so you're going to have a bad life. Now you know it. You're not going to be able to solve it. So the actual only way that we can actually eradicate karma is through bhakti. Or if you want to be to do it the less effectively, then you can perform austerities which have no connection to bhakti. And that these austerities are a lot harder to perform, and the amount of suffering you have to go through is a lot greater in order to get the result. The thing about chanting the holy name, if you chant even once unconsciously, then you can be liberated. This is what the first canto states. You know, apana samsritim goram yanama bibaso vrinam tata sajo vimucheta yadbi beti svayambayam. The holy name of the Lord is feared by fear personified. And if you even unconsciously chant the holy name of the Lord, you can destroy more sins than you can commit. You can actually attain liberation. Tato sajja vimucheta. Not just after a long time, but sajja means immediately. That is the power of the holy name. And remember what happened when someone doubted that. They doubted the power of Namabhas. Haridas Thakur was glorifying Namabhas. And a certain Gopal Chakravarti doubted it. And due to that offense, his nose fell off. He got leprosy and it melted. Very unfortunate, because he was a very beautiful person. Anyway, I was discussing how we should be very careful not to go to an unqualified astrologer. So I was mentioning, I read this book from a distinguished astrologer. He was discussing his career in astrology, and he was explaining how even after very much education, he would still get things wrong. He'd read a chart, come to some conclusion, and he would get it wrong. Later on, he'd find out he was wrong. You know, reality would manifest differently, and he would be like, how did that happen? And then he'd go back to the chart and he'd discover something subtle. Because astrology is not just about following an algorithm. There's intuition, which requires good character to keep that intuition. Therefore, it said, the astrologer should never charge. You shouldn't make a business out of astrology. If you do so, you lose your intuition. It's like Brahmins. Brahmins should never charge for education. They should give education freely and accept whatever donation they get in return. And if they charge, that is, Prabhupada said, if a Brahmin charges, then he's like profession of a dog. Shwavritti. The Brahmin never charges. You know, the Brahmin only receives donation. It's culture. And just to qualify that, we also don't charge for prasadam. But sometimes Prabhupada said, if people are just simply uncultured, then we can charge. So there is room for that. I'm not saying that. I don't want to walk out of this class and someone calls me and says, Govinda, we're really very unhappy with what you said, because we charge for some of our courses at Bhaktivedanta Manor, and you're implying that we are dogs. No, I'm not saying that. There is actual, and Prabhupada actually approved, in certain situations we can charge, we can hold programs and we can charge an entry fee, because people value something when they pay for it. If you ask someone, like we sell Prabhupada's books, we like to get a donation, because then they value it, you see. It's not that we're doing business. Anyway, so I made this point. So we have to be very, we have to be very careful when it comes to astrology, and that we should not just think that someone knows astrology if just because they're advertising themselves as an astrologer and telling us how much they charge for their various services. I know one devotee, according to his astrology, he has trouble getting married. And he is now, the last I checked, he'd spent several thousand pounds on about, you know, 100 different astrological charts he'd had done. And every time the chart was done, it either said it was incompatible or it was compatible, but he decided he was incompatible with this person because he couldn't marry them. There was something about them, you see. So we can sort of spend our life taking shelter of these non-essential sciences. But if we do so, then we're actually not taking shelter of Krishna. So in such situations, perhaps a better option is just to say, Krishna, it's completely in your hands, and we just surrender to Krishna, and let me just take advantage of our situation, because to not be married is a great opportunity to engage in full-time devotional service. And there isn't this financial pressure to feed so many mouths in the family. So we should, whatever situation we are in life, we can see the good in that and fully take advantage of it. And I'll give you the opposite thing that can sometimes happen. Sometimes there are brahmacharis who can't really focus on being brahmacharis because they're too busy thinking about getting married. And then when they're married, they can't really fully get into their married life because they're too busy thinking, I wish I was a brahmachari. So Gaur Govinda Maharaj, he made the joke, he said, married life is like the Dilaka Ladu. You know this analogy? It's a beautiful ladu. Anyone who doesn't get this ladu is lamenting, I wish I could taste this ladu. But it's a very rich ladu. So everyone who eats it gets a stomach ache and they think, I wish I'd never taken the ladu. So married life can be compared to this ladu. Those who are not married who want it, they're thinking, I wish I was married. And those who are married are thinking, oh, I wish I wasn't married. I wish I could be like a brahmachari or whatever. You know, that's the nature of life. But that is the nature of the mind. You know, kim badram kim abadram va dvatasya vaishtana kiyat. Where is good and bad in this material world? It's all a big illusion. You know, this is the 11th canto. It's a big illusion, good and bad. And Mahaprabhu, he taught this to Sanatana Goswami. He said to him, Dvaiti badra badra jnan sabha mano dharma e bhalo e manda e sabha brahm. He said to Sanatana Goswami, don't think there's such a thing as good and bad in this world. It is all simply mano brahm, an illusion. Therefore, he's telling, this is the dharma of the sannyas. The sannyasi has to come to the platform of no longer thinking good and bad. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because those that get too involved in astrology, they're actually absorbed in the dualities of delusion. The reason people do so many astrological charts is because they want good things to happen to them and they don't want bad things to happen to them. But we should ultimately understand that good and bad is an illusion and we should only want one thing, to serve Krishna. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says, Shukha Dukha Seva Sampad, Parama Sampad. My ultimate wealth is not just sukha, but dukkha as well, if it's in the service of the Lord. There's two types of service. There's dukkha seva, service in misery. The misery is due to service. And then there's sukha seva, the happiness from service. Oh, sorry, let's switch it around. Seva sukha or seva dukkha. Anyway, either way around, whichever way it is, I can't remember exactly how Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes it. But what he says is, that is my greatest wealth. If I undergo misery in the service of the Lord, that is my greatest wealth. And he does not try and avoid it. And this is the point. If we go to astrology to avoid misery, we're actually still in ignorance. And ultimately, we have to come out of that ignorance. And that is our real wealth. Therefore, if someone decides to take no interest whatsoever in astrology and just depend on Krishna, then that is a very laudable sentiment and we should respect it. And at the same time, if someone wishes to use astrology in Krishna's service, that is also a good thing to do if it's done sensibly. And I'll conclude with one story from my friend and godbrother, Sri Prahlad. He was very interested in astrology. And for many years, he went on the Polish tour. So one year, they were deciding what day will they start the Polish tour. They have this, it's about 4 month festivals. They're going to decide which day to start. So they picked a date. And because he was interested in astrology, he looked at the this date and he said, this is a very inauspicious day to start this festival. We shouldn't do this. It's predicted that it will be terrible if we start on this day. The management, they decided, Prahlad, you're too into astrology, just chill out, you know. We will depend on Krishna. Krishna's transcendental, devotional service is transcendental, and it's not a problem. So they went ahead and they did the festival. And here's what happened on the first day. During the festival, a group of skinheads, Polish skinheads, they threw smoke bombs. All the smoke bombs and the smoke kind of appeared. Everyone couldn't see what was going on. And they had baseball bats and they had, you know, they just came for a fight, big boots on, and they started beating up devotees. And there was a big brawl between devotees and them. One devotee had a big scar across his face. There was a few injuries. It was a bit of a traumatic experience. And I just threw it in at the end just to let you know that sometimes it maybe is a good idea to listen to the astrological chart. So it's a very subtle thing, a subtle point. And I think what happened afterwards, just to let you know, they discovered that these skinheads had actually been paid by the Catholic Church to disrupt the festival. Things are improving in Poland, but anyway, there's one very famous personality. He's very much in favor of the Hare Krishnas, and he promotes the Hare Krishnas. So the fortunes of the Hare Krishnas have definitely improved over the years, and the relationships are improving. Anyway, don't want to end on that inauspicious note. So let's just try and end on an auspicious note. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So thank you all very much for tolerating me, being patient, and I open up for comments and questions.